Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's episode is with Leela Srinivasan. And she's the CMO of Lever. Lever is a collaborative hiring platform that engages your entire company in the sourcing, vetting, and closing of top tier talent. When everyone gets involved, interviewers, hiring managers, and C-suite, hiring can become more strategic and more effective. I'm really, really excited to have you on the show, Leela.
Thank you so much, Tayo. It's great to be here.
Well, the pleasure is mine. And for those listening, I didn't actually meet Leela, but I actually attended a talk she was given at a client of mine's office here in New York City. And I heard what she was talking about and how she was approaching what truly matters in recruiting and hiring. And I thought she'd be a great guest, and her background really fascinated me because you have a very British accent, but I feel like you've grown up in several countries, and I kind of wanted to give you a chance to talk about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Absolutely. So yes, good pickup on the accent. I did grow up in Scotland, in fact, and was there until after college. I moved over to the States. I've been in the States now for almost about 20 years, in fact. I've lived in Florida, I've lived in Massachusetts, I've lived in New Hampshire, New York for a little bit, California, North Carolina, went back to London for a few months and then came back to the States. So I wish I had lived in many countries. I've certainly traveled to a number. My dad is from India, which explains the last name, Srinivasan. Well pronounced, by the way. Very impressed.
I was nervous.
Well, you aced it, so no need. As you mentioned, today I'm the chief marketing officer at a company called Lever. We're a venture-backed startup based out in San Francisco, Series B. And we're helping over 1,000 companies all over the world to hire better. And the reason that our co-founders decided to focus on hiring was when they talked to business leaders 5 years ago about, you know, what was the biggest problem that they could solve for them. Every single one said hiring, because the way hiring works in today's modern age has transformed really over the last 10, 15 years. But the tools that were supporting hiring hadn't changed. And this will come as no surprise to your listeners, Tayo, based on anyone with a pulse under the age of 40 or 50 years old, I think can appreciate how the digital transformation that we've been privy to over the last several years, and there's no signs of slowing down. And we see that, we feel that as consumers on a daily basis in the technology that we use at home. But that revolution around technology hadn't really started to hit the workplace until fairly recently. And so, at Lever, we're really helping companies embrace the digital age and make sure that they are using technology that helps them put their best foot forward when they're in conversation with modern candidates, when they are trying to get their entire organization to focus on attracting and getting into dialogue and hopefully hiring amazing people.
I'd love that you broke that down that way, because you and I are in similar fields, and sometimes the conversation I do hear on the topics that hiring managers and recruiters bring up is this idea that there's a talent gap, one, and then it's hard to sort of find diverse talent. And sometimes when I'm hearing that, I'm hearing they don't know where to source from. And in your experience, you know, working with all these companies that are trying to really make an impact by tapping into non-traditional, hires and people from different backgrounds, various underrepresented groups, what have you seen that are best practices that work?
That's such a great question. So where to begin? Well, I would say, first of all, and this is something that, you know, for those of you who have been a candidate recently, I know how frustrating it is, and I'm really sorry. So many companies do a poor job today of running an efficient and effective hiring process. And that's partly because, to be honest, the average hiring manager probably hasn't had a ton of training. They're trying to build out a team. They may have experience doing that, they may not. But so much of what goes wrong in the hiring process today is really about how teams are equipped and empowered and have the knowledge to know how to build a team in a way that works for their organization. So, an example of that, and I think this gets to some of the issues that we see in diversity and building an inclusive workforce today. The job description, the way most job descriptions are written, is unwittingly biased. And there are companies out there today like Textio that help organizations actually screen their job descriptions to make sure they are not, for example, biasing toward one gender or the other. But I think it's no secret, and the research has been done by many organizations, that, for instance, women tend to apply to roles when they come close to matching 100% of the requirements, whereas men will apply if they match, say, 60% of the requirements. Now, that's a generalization, right? It's not true for everyone. But what it means is, if you look at the way that classically job descriptions are written, they're often like this laundry list of things that the candidate must have done, experience they must have, qualifications that must be on their resume. And sometimes, companies just unwittingly end up losing part of the candidate pool who really takes that information at face value and says, you know what, I'm not right for that role. So that's one thing. And in fact, at Lever, one thing that we've done, and I should say at the outset, we care very deeply about diversity and inclusion. We're about 100 employees today. We are 50% women, 40% non-white. We have more female managers than male managers, and we've really tried very hard to focus on diversity and inclusion from the outset. But as part of that, we sort of threw traditional job descriptions out the window, knowing that there is this inherent bias in the way that many of them are written. And also realizing that job description, for a company, that's your primary means of advertising, of marketing to your candidate, to helping them understand what it would be like to work at your organization. So instead, we came up with something called an impact description. And a core part of the impact description tells the candidate what they can expect to accomplish in 1 month on the job, 3 months, 6 months, and sometimes even 12 months in the role. And the idea is to give really help candidates get a much more concrete and tangible sense of what they can expect to accomplish by joining Lever in a way that inspires them and doesn't alienate them by making them think they must have X number of years of experience or must have a specific qualification. And the feedback we get from candidates is really positive. I think they like having that tangible sense of what they will actually accomplish if they are to come on board.
I can see that. Yeah, I mean, giving them a mission and giving them that firm foundation of what their why would be is something that would inspire anyone. I mean, it basically, especially, I know it's often tied to millennial generation, but I think any generation wants to have a mission. And just giving them that mission is something that's great. And I love that. Something you said struck me there, because I have done research on Lever, and you do have about 100 employees and you have 50-50 gender balance. And you said 40% people of color. Now, that is fascinating to me because you're in Silicon Valley. You're in the area where people have figured out rocket science, but haven't figured out how to hire people of color. Now, I'm wondering, as your company that has got, you're venture backed, you got over $33 million of funding, what is it that you do differently that they don't do, that your fellow counterparts don't do? And I'm not, I know you talked about the impact and the job description, but from your observation as someone who's had experience working with companies at LinkedIn and Bain and Co., what are the things that leaders need to start doing from the outset to make sure that you don't get into an Uber-like situation where you have all these type of problems?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, I think part of it is committing early. But, you know, these days people talk about diversity and inclusion in the same breath. And I think Lever's success has been based on really focusing on building an inclusive work environment. Because if you don't do that, if you don't build an environment where employees of every background feel like they can belong, thrive, do their best work, achieve their full potential, and, you know, a place where they want to refer their friends, then if you don't, in the absence of that, if you focus on recruiting diverse candidates and they get to your organization and then they don't feel that they can belong, you're going to have a retention problem, basically. And so it becomes a sort of spiral of doom, basically, on the recruiting side. So long before I got to Lever, when Lever was about 10 employees, we founded our first diversity and inclusion task force. And I think what made it successful was it wasn't something that was mandated by the leadership team. It was a very organic movement that sprung from team members at the time who were super passionate about very intentionally creating a culture that felt inclusive and that did welcome different perspectives, different backgrounds, different demographics, and so on and so forth. And so inclusion and diversity have been embedded in our culture since we were just 10 employees. And as we've scaled the organization, we've just embedded thinking around inclusion into different aspects of it. So for instance, every new employee goes through a week-long ramp camp. And so this is like their onboarding program at Lever. It's a great program. It's better than programs I've had probably anywhere else I've worked. And I've worked at some large companies with a lot of resources. And what I like about it is it really does infuse a lot of Lever's culture and values into our new employees as part of the process. So going back to, you know, we were talking about recruiting earlier and what do companies get right, get wrong. Lever, as with LinkedIn and Bain and other places, having a strong set of values that employees could use to guide their actions and think about how to uphold themselves to those standards has been really important, I think, for Lever. And so values are a huge part of the conversation in Ramp Camp. We talk to diversity and inclusion and its role in Lever's growth. We get into the founder story. We talk about design thinking, which is another huge aspect of Lever's success. And so Lever approaches everything with this design thinking mindset, which encourages you to really empathize with your audience, whether it's customers, users, other members of the team in different, you know, across the aisle. So empathy is something that's very rooted in our culture as well. So I'd say, you know, and then what happens is, so then you create this culture of inclusion where we do see people from all backgrounds succeeding. We also were very encouraging of employees sharing their experience externally. And I think especially at small companies, it can be hard to compete with the big employer brand budgets and, you know, the deep pockets of all the companies that we're surrounded by in the Valley. But if you can just get the stories out there, get real authentic stories from your employees, how they think about the world, why they chose Lever, why they love working at Lever, why does that culture work for them, then these are stories that end up attracting more diverse populations of candidates back in. And right. So again, it becomes a sort of virtuous cycle, a flip side, where if you're getting it right and if you have built an organization where people truly feel they can succeed regardless of their circumstances, that in turn will attract more people who are looking for that in their career.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said before, companies that view recruiting as a transaction are missing the point. Recruiting has always been about relationships. And to add to the point you just made about the employer brand, if people are sharing about, you know, their experiences in the company and other people of color or people of different orientations or whatever can see themselves in these people raving about the company, they then think and believe that they have a chance at that company. And that's that thing that consciously works into that that cycle. So I love that you shared that.
Yep.
Talk to me about LinkedIn. LinkedIn, for someone like you, what you've done, LinkedIn is obviously seen several iterations, and it's continued to grow and grow and grow. And, you know, acquisition is interesting. I think you were there from the beginning stages, right?
So I was there when I got to LinkedIn. Let me think. It was not the beginning. So LinkedIn had a really slow burn for the first several years.
Very slow burn, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was founded in 2003. So when I joined, LinkedIn was already 6.5 years old. So it was beginning of 2010. Okay. The company was about 500 employees, though, so it still felt relatively small.
Yeah.
And so I joined the Talent Solutions group, basically, or division within LinkedIn, which was where I sort of started this like obsession I have with talent acquisition, all that good stuff. And then I was there for about 4.5 years. So by the time I left, LinkedIn was about 6,500 employees.
Yeah.
So there had definitely been some pretty significant growth in that time.
Yeah.
Which was really, it was exhilarating. It was hard work. It was inspiring. I think, you know, I still have a really soft spot in my heart for LinkedIn. Today they're at the, you know, today they're preferred partner, Lever's a preferred partner of the Talent Solutions group, which means that we have like a best-in-class integration with LinkedIn Recruiter, which is the flagship product in their portfolio. But I think what LinkedIn did right and continues to do right, by accounts of friends I have that still work there, is they really, again, you know, we're coming back to the same issues, right? They focused on mission, vision, values, and culture early on, and they were pretty maniacal about making sure that those were reinforced at company meetings. And then in addition, I think LinkedIn, as it scaled, did a really nice job of prioritizing and keeping that real focus on the top priorities across the organization. Because I think sometimes when you're going through that hyper growth, it's easy to just feel completely lost and, you know, like things are out of control, and to just get lost in all the noise and all the growth and all the things that need to be done. And if you're trying to do too many things at once, you end up not really accomplishing anything. And I do think LinkedIn was comparatively good about reinforcing OKRs and having company-wide objectives that really trickle down, and so and a great management team as well, even to this day. So I think there were lots of things that they did well. It's an interesting time for them, obviously, being part of Microsoft now. I definitely wish the team well, and again, I think they remain a very important force in talent acquisition. So almost any company that you can think of a certain size is going to be using LinkedIn heavily as a resource as they think about reaching out to what we call passive candidates, people that aren't actually looking for a new job, but might have a conversation if you tap them on the shoulder and get them interested.
Right. Yeah. And the reason why I wanted to.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
To talk to you about that and ask you about that is because even though you weren't there from the beginning, is at the time you came there, it was still a relatively medium-sized company, and then it just skyrocketed throughout your time there. And I'm always very curious about scaling and keeping that, preserving that culture, because oftentimes, sometimes when companies grow from there, in my conversations when I'm consulting, their biggest fear is, how do we preserve this? I mean, we're making so much money, profits, and they lose sense of the priorities. So I don't know LinkedIn personally as much as you do, but I don't know if they've, it seems like from what you're saying, they maintain that. So I'm just always curious as to anyone listening here who may be found or going through like a rapid boom, and what he or she can think about as he or she's trying to expand and scale. So,
I mean, so again, you know, knowing what you stand for as an organization is vital.
Yeah.
So for the entire duration of my stay at LinkedIn, we had the same set of company values. We had the same cultural tenets, and these were just, they were part of the fabric. They were the guideposts that we used to make decisions. So I think it's about equipping your team with the right decision-making frameworks and that might come in the guise of values, for example, so that people, because as you scale, you know, what happens is the decision-making authority, unless you're absolutely bonkers and try and keep it all yourself, the decision-making authority gets passed down to different ranks in the organization. And so in order to maintain that consistency and quality, you need to provide people with the tools to make effective decisions quickly. Otherwise, you get slowed down or you make poor decisions, right? Neither of those are good outcomes necessarily. Absolutely. And so, yeah. And so I think, you know, we're trying that lever here as well by having five very, very explicit values that we care deeply about and that we try and reinforce. And I think that certainly my experience at LinkedIn was important. It was also important at Bain & Company, I would say, where they had 10 different values, which were used and cited frequently as when people were seen doing exemplary things, or on the flip side, doing things that didn't really jive with the way that Bain wanted to operate.
Yeah, exactly. You said a lot of companies use Lever now. What type of companies are using Lever?
It's so fun, Tayo. I mean, I'll tell you, when I first got here about a year and a half ago, most of our clients were startups, and we still work with hundreds of startups today. But increasingly, we're moving up market and working with larger and larger organizations to help them really hire in a way that feels collaborative, that involves the entire organization, that helps them deliver a great candidate experience, and just provides them with the agility that they need to compete for talent. So today, you know, for instance, we support all hiring at Netflix.
Oh, wow. And
yeah. So, you know, and there are companies larger than Netflix that we work with as well. So really it comes down to the companies, how much is the company embracing that they need to get with the digital transformation and think about the future of work, think about putting great tools and technologies in the hands of their employees, and really valuing the valuing agility, valuing speed, valuing people's ability to work quickly and collaborate quickly and hiring great people.
Yeah. It does seem like, you know, this intersection between globalization and digitalization is not going anywhere. So if companies don't adapt to that or actually, you know, apply what the reality of the world is to their hiring methods, they're not going to be successful ultimately.
Yeah, totally. In fact, I was at a recruiting conference, it must be about 6 months ago. And one of the speakers was the talent acquisition leader from a very large company. And this individual sort of confessed that they were in the process of coming to terms with the fact that they would need to replace their core recruiting technology. And, you know, the type of system that we are is called an applicant tracking system. And they knew that they were going to have to replace it soon because they were increasingly aware of the fact that the technology that they offered employees in the workplace to recruit was so far outclassed by consumer technology. So, you know, we've all become, you know, we all carry around a really powerful computer in our pocket. We're all, you know, we've grown up in the age of iPhones and really, you know, we're kind of spoiled in terms of our expectations of what technology can and should deliver. And you can absolutely contrast that with the average applicant tracking system. Many of these systems were invented 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and honestly, they suck. They're just not, it's not a good user experience. And what that results in is the team that's doing the hiring, they disconnect. They don't put feedback in the system. They lose that speed. They lose that agility. Candidates have a poor experience when they're trying to apply because the system makes them jump through all these hoops and isn't mobile friendly and just leaves them feeling frustrated. And then, of course, they don't hear back from the company. So, you know, their application, if they can get it in, just disappears into a black hole.
Right.
And so all the things that are wrong in recruiting today from a candidate perspective, it's part technology driven. It's part about the companies realizing that the onus is on them to communicate crisply and quickly with their candidates in order to deliver a strong experience.
Talking here with recruiting expert and CMO of Lever, Leela Srinivasan, and we touched on the point that ATS or applicant tracking systems are so important and need to be updated. But the thing that I love that you talk about is so personal to me. First of all, you know, I've gone through every sort of hiring or every experience a candidate can go through, because I'm an international here who applied to over 85 jobs and got rejected when he first graduated from college. And I was still in the back of my mind thinking of, I also have to find someone to sponsor me for an H-1B. And then, you know, and then I decided I was going to be an entrepreneur. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what type of visa that is. And it was all this back and forth. Number one thing was this lack of responsiveness. I was like, just tell me where I am. I don't know, you know, just break my heart. You know, you've already done it over 80 times. I just need to know so I can get the feedback. But you're saying that if you did nothing but increase your responsiveness to all candidates through the recruiting funnel, your candidates would be doing cartwheels.
Yes. No, absolutely. I think it's so true. I mean, it's courtesy apart from anything else. But I think that the smarter companies have cottoned onto this. And you can read case studies and work that's been done by brands like Virgin and Starbucks and so forth, where they understand that there's this blurring of lines between candidate and customer. And so if you're Starbucks hiring a barista, for example, then chances are somebody applying to be a barista has probably had a cup of Starbucks or two in their life, right? They're probably a customer. And if they have a really poor experience as a candidate, that's going to sour their opinion of you as a brand. And before you know it, maybe you lose their business to Pete's or to Phil's Coffee or somewhere else, right? And so, yeah. In this age of candidate and customer sort of becoming blurred, especially in B2C technologies or B2C companies, companies really can't afford to deliver a poor candidate experience because it will hurt their bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely true. All boils down to the employer brand and how the bottom line will ultimately affect it if you don't care about the things that you should care about initially. It doesn't matter how attractive your profits are seemingly, but ultimately if your foundation is not firm in the company culture and you don't pay attention to the people that you actually serve, you know, it'll come back to bite you. So love that point. The future of applicant tracking system certainly seems to be with Lever here. So I'm glad that you're highlighting that. What are the future goals for Lever and what do you hope to achieve in the next 5 years?
Wow, 5 years. So we've been around for 5 years.
Oh, well, the 10 years is an important mark.
Yes, it is. So we've been growing really nicely. It's been very exciting to be part of this story so far. So, you know, we're continuing to just onboard more and more clients to help them become successful at recruiting in this modern era. And so, you know, I anticipate we'll continue to do that. We'll continue to work with larger and larger organizations as we continue to evolve. But if I think about Lever's overall, you know, our mission is around being able to scale and share hiring through effortless collaboration. So really, you know, flying the flag basically for companies to be able to really work, have the entire team play the right role in identifying, attracting, engaging, and hiring talent. So we'll continue to work on that. In the longer term, we have a vision that every company can connect human potential to meaningful work. So, you know, this was something that drew me to LinkedIn in the first place, right? Where, I mean, their mission was around, connecting professionals to make them more productive and successful. And from our standpoint, if you get the hiring right, if you can identify human potential and talent, bring them into your organization, and then find ways to connect them to meaningful work, then everybody wins. The organization benefits by having great talent deployed in ways that will help the company be successful. The individual wins because they feel fulfilled and inspired and driven to succeed and equipped to become their best selves. And so we really believe that if we can put technology into the hands of employees or organizations that they enjoy using, that they collaborate in using, first for hiring and subsequent for other aspects of the talent chain, then that's going to really help companies boost everything to do with their talent.
Love it. Well, that's you just heard the future of Lever here. So we're getting ready to wrap up the interview, but I wanted to ask you some fun rapid fire questions, if that's okay.
Uh-oh.
So you said you grew up in Scotland, right?
Yes.
Scotland, and you have Indian parents or Indian dad?
Indian dad, Scottish and Polish mother.
Okay. So what was it like growing up with all those cultures?
You know, I wish it had been more, I wish I had more of a story there. So here's your fun trivia fact. My dad left India in the 60s to move to Britain, I think partially to escape an arranged marriage. And so, and he'd be delighted that I told you that, I'm sure. But I think being an Indian fella that just showed up in London and then moved up to Scotland in the 60s, I think he was really, looking to fit in, to be part of something. So he was looking for it to be included. And at the time for him, inclusion probably didn't involve behaving like the quintessential Indian. And so I grew up with sort of Indian, I'd say, influences on the fringes. And we certainly spent time in India as a family. But I don't, I wish I had had a more Indian upbringing in some ways so that I could be more in touch with that side of my culture.
Gotcha.
But I will say, I mean, Scotland was a fantastic place to grow up, and I try and get back every chance I can.
Yeah. Scotland is somewhere I haven't been. I want to go to Edinburgh, but I've always heard nice things about it, but I haven't. But you do have Andy Murray, who's the current number one tennis player in the world. And can you, for those listening, most of my family is British, as is with many Nigerians. But one of the number one questions I've had from my listeners whenever we have a British guest is to explain the difference with Great Britain, England, United Kingdom, and why in sports it's different, in Olympics it's different, but for the government it's different, and why you vote for something. It's, you know, there's just that UK, Wales, Northern Ireland, what does that mean? When do you say you're British? When do you say you're English? When do you say you're Scottish?
Oh, gosh. That is like a – we could talk for another half hour on the intricacies of this, so – So, you know, the UK, so first of all, I'm Scottish. I identify with British. I rankle slightly when people call me English, but I think most Scots and Irish folks would say that. So the UK is England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. So that's the United Kingdom, basically. And then Great Britain is England, Scotland, and Wales. So it's actually the joined countries, so it excludes any part of Ireland. And then the British Isles, it includes all of Ireland and all of England, Scotland, and Wales. So, you know, two separate land masses, basically.
Wow.
But, of course, it's all going out the window anyway with Brexit. Who knows? Who knows what will happen?
Well, that's my point with the Brexit thing, because then Scotland, for example, probably didn't want this, but maybe Wales wanted it, then... You know, then, but they make the whole decision for the whole country. And then maybe Scotland wants to be in the EU, but that can't happen because they're not a separate entity and you have to vote for that. So I always wonder, you know, how someone that lives in Scotland feels, and if you feel like you should be a separate country or not, or maybe you think you should be stay the same. I have no idea.
At this point, I am a citizen of the world. That's all I can tell you.
Well, it's a very, very, very diplomatic answer, my friend. let's wrap up here by these last couple of questions. Country with the best food in the world.
Oh man, I'm gonna say India.
India, country with the best music.
Oh, I'm not really living up to this rapid fire expectation. I'm gonna say UK.
Okay. I mean, you're a citizen of the world, so it's very hard to pick. I completely understand. But okay, the mission statement of this podcast is called Use Your Difference to Make a Difference. That's how I live my life. It's the foundation of everything I do, whether it's cultural competency, diversity, inclusion, or leadership training. And I ask my guests this as a final question. How do you use your difference to make a difference, Lila?
My difference is... I think it's my ability to connect with people and my desire to connect with people. And so I collect people over the years and I try not to let go. And of course that's become easier with time and with technology. Facebook, LinkedIn, you name it, have all made the world such a small place. But I really try and cultivate relationships. And so I hope this is not the last time that we speak.
Oh no, it won't be. It won't be. I love what you do, and I love your mission, and I can't wait to share your message, because I was so taken by what you said that day that I felt like I had to reach out to you. So I think you're serving a greater purpose than a lot of people, because people spend most of their lives in the workplaces, and if you can change how we hire, fire, retain, I think that's going to be a real revolution that you're starting. So I love that.
Thank you. It's really exciting work. I'm super passionate about this space. So if anybody ever wants to talk recruiting or recruiting technology or talent, please look me up on LinkedIn or hit me up on social media.
All right. And that's lever.co, right?
Yep. Our website's lever.co. That's right.
All right. I'll put that in the show notes. But I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And ladies and gentlemen, till next week, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.